let's make sure we're all back in fellowship. If you got out on break, don't know what could have happened, but you never know. It doesn't take me much to get out of fellowship sometimes. All right, let's make sure we're ready, though, and continue on here, dealing with the practical fleshing out of this command. What does it exactly mean? How does it play out in real life? It's easy to say, but it has to be played out in the crucible of human experience, and sometimes that involves difficulty, suffering. Well, a lot of times we're on this side of the angelic conflict. We live in a hostile environment. We're behind enemy lines, and we're outmatched. I say we give up. I say we throw in the towel. I hear they got good food in the POW camp. No, I'm being facetious, of course. But those things are all true. We are outmatched. We fighting an opponent we can't see. Opponents, multiple. And we have the spirit of the age, the zeitgeist, the whole cosmos, and all the way it thinks now. And what's the big deal now? And so we've got that working against us. And the demons, unseen forces that have plenty of experience, power, knowledge. They've been around a long time. They know what works and what doesn't. I wouldn't be shocked, as one guy said, if Satan's got a file, as it were, probably not a paper one, obviously, but has a file on every believer. And the positive believers are even more marked. So just know that if you intend to do this right in the last days, instead of being like most Christians who are lukewarm and just phone it in, frankly, you're going to have to make some hard choices. And you're going to have to face some very serious conflicts. And it'll take all that you have, this battle. So we don't want to minimize it. And then, on top of all of those things, you factor in two sin natures butting heads under the same roof. And so you got a recipe either for real success or a recipe for disaster, given all that we face. And the age and history and all of that, we know that we're into the period of time that Jesus talked about, like the days of Noah. We know that it's here. Man's heart is only set on evil continually, generally speaking. And the demons have invaded our country, and they take up residence, and people are all too happy to entertain them. And the reality is they don't realize what's happening, but little by little their lives are being stolen from them. And we want to be able to live. Again, not just simply to be alive, but to live life. We talk about God's eternal life. It's not just a duration, it's a quality. It's the quality of life that God himself lives. In unmatched splendor. Do you think God's worried about anything? Oh, I forgot about that one. I left the light on. No, God's not worried about anything. He's not anxious. He knows where we are. He knows what's going on. He keeps track of everything. And he's more than capable of handling our problems if we are willing to let him. And this is really all this boils down to at some level in the household codes, is cooperating with what God's revealed will is in these matters. And working these things out in the practical day-to-day experience of life that we all have to deal with. So we left off here, still working on verse 25. This is all important enough. As you can tell, I haven't rushed through this, and I don't intend to. Because this is where we all live. Everybody needs to hear this. And even more, everybody needs to apply it. It's not just the hearing of it, of course. We don't want to be delusional, like some believers are, who hear the word but don't do it. And the word's stolen away from them at whatever level. The demonic forces work against them and convince them they don't have to apply all these things, same things you and I have to apply. Well, there are no special exemptions in the angelic conflict. God's son didn't even get a special exemption. He didn't have, the foxes had dens and the birds had nests, but he didn't have a place to lay his head. So he didn't get any special exemptions out of all these struggles and suffering that we all face. So as mentioned previously, I think we left off here with point 60. One aspect of one's love for one's wife is the matter of finances. But the husband has to be generally the provider. And again, there can be exceptions to this. We're not making hard and fast rules. But these are the general principles by which the world was set up to operate. And if you're at odds with the general principles by the way the world works, you're going to struggle. You're going to find difficulty. So obviously he must have the cooperation of his wife if the family's to be healthy financially. Wives have been known to go behind their husband's back and spend money or get credit cards or do things because they can. And you can't stop that, but you want to make sure you stay on top of it. And if you're a good leader and you want to do your responsibilities right and you want to be the kind of head that you're supposed to be as a husband, you pray about it, and God won't let your wife put stuff over on you long term. I've seen it play out in life. I know he won't. Same thing with parents. Very same principle's true at any level of authority. If you want to do your job right, and you're praying about it, God will bless you with the information you need when you need it, and will protect you in these kinds of things. And so wives may not look and say, well, I just got my own credit card, and I spend my own money and all of that, and it's none of his business. Really? Really, that's about as arrogant as telling me that the flock is none of my business. Telling your husband is none of his business. Well, that's not cooperation, certainly at the bare minimum. It's not that. And so, again, but if a husband's handling his areas right, and again, this is where the buck all stops, is with the husbands. Well, we can exhort the wives all day long. But at the end of the day, who's God going to poll when it's all said and done? Who did God go after first in the garden after the fall? I believe he went after the man. And I believe at the Bema seat, that's going to be part of this. Part of your reward or lack thereof is going to be how you function as a husband in the angelic conflict. So simply because the husband may provide the majority of the family's financial needs, although exceptions exist, he generally should, does not mean the finances are to be divided in marriage by the percentage that each one contributes. Men have this tendency to think, I pay all the bills, I make the money, therefore you don't have the right to question me, and I can do whatever I want. Well, guess what? That's not correct. Not doctrinally, it's not correct. It may work, it may fly in the devil's world, and it may work. But if we start doing this by percentage, well, what if your wife is disabled or couldn't work? Well, I'm sorry, you don't get anything, not even food. I mean, if you're going to take this to that extreme, that's what you would have to say. And not that people would do that. Hopefully they wouldn't. But so this isn't the way it works. This may be the way the courts think it works, but it doesn't work this way in real life. Again, the idea here is that if you're going to nickel and dime your wife to death, well, God, would you want to live under that? Does God do that to us? And so as men, we have to constantly ask ourselves, well, how's God treat me? Because this is the same way he wants me to treat my wife, is the way he treats me. So 62, in a normal apostolic Christian household, the wife's responsibilities generally did not include supporting the family financially. Her responsibilities were to be sensible, sexually pure, work at home, raise the children, and manage the household properly under the husband's headship. This is where she gets her SG3. So, wives who aren't doing this, if you're not taking care of your home, if you're not fulfilling these responsibilities, you are throwing away your potential reward hand over fist. Say, well, my husband will do it if I don't. Yeah, that's what the Bible teaches. I remember reading that in here. Don't worry about it. The husband will take care of it if you don't. No, it doesn't let you off the hook. If you have a good husband who will help you, fine, there's nothing wrong with that. But that should be his choice to help. He shouldn't be forced into it because you won't get up and do your job. That shouldn't be the way it is. Titus 2, 4 and 5. Verse 3. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior. Not malicious gossip, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good. The positive adjusted Christian wife has a lot to say. And other women can profit from women who've actually made it. The jury's out on all of us. When I say made it, at least made it to this point. That they can be a wealth of information. And the idea, well, I want to have a marriage just like you have after 50 years. Well, it doesn't work that way. This doesn't, you can't just bottle it and sell it. Oh, if we could, that'd be great. Here's the formula, successful marriage formula. And you just pour it on your head every couple of times every day and rub it in good. And you'll have a successful marriage. The weird thing is I could probably sell this on HSN. And there are probably takers out there for this stuff. There's a sucker born every minute, I heard. If we could just figure out ways to exploit it. Well, we're not here to exploit the devil's world. That's not us. But again, they have a responsibility, an obligation. If people say, well, I'm a woman, but I don't want to talk in public and I don't want to try to help other people because I'm not qualified or whatever you think. Dump it. It's wrong. If you've lived a successful Christian life and have a successful marriage, i.e. you still haven't killed each other. To me, a successful marriage often is measured by the fact that you're both still alive. And if you have all that, well, you have a lot to teach the younger women. And they're not always going to like what the older women teach. Younger women, you know, well, I want to know how to have a successful marriage. Sometimes you need to shut your mouth. I didn't want to hear that. Sometimes you need to quit wanting your own way so much. Sometimes you need to quit being the center of attention. This is the sin nature, though. The sin nature wants to be the center of attention. I got to have attention. And I'm going to get it. Now, how do people generally get attention? Starting with children, they act out. That's how they get it. And so this isn't befitting. This isn't fitting for wives. So what teaching what is good? Well, what is good? Well, encouraging the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. And when wives don't live the way they're supposed to live, we get a black eye at the local church. When we have people who refuse to abide by the biblical standards, and well, what church do they go to? It's a witness against the church, frankly. Who would want to go to a place that taught or tolerated such behavior? I would. I would look for something else. So, again, the idea here is she's got a lot to say, but a lot of it is about fundamental housework and care for the home. That's what it is. And there isn't a woman who's off the hook on this. And I have to say, I recognize Linda can't do what she used to do, but still, now that we've got some things better managed, at least, you know, you start replacing every joint in the body, it helps, I guess. We're doing a brain transplant next, but I'll get her fixed up. But what she can get up and do, she does. I don't have to tell her. I don't have to say, well, this hasn't been cleaned, or you know, this is, you know, whatever. She takes care of it to the extent that she can. Obviously, can't do what she used to. I get it. This is how I found out men can do stuff in the house. It was a real revelation for me. I was used to laying on the sofa till dinner was ready. And then I'd go eat. Somehow, the table got cleaned off. The food got put up. The dishes got washed. I never knew how. I just thought it was miraculous. And I'd go lay back on the sofa. And, you know, watch TV. Watch my ball games or whatever. And I said, you know, it's really funny. I told her one day, and I was teasing a little bit, but I said, you know, it's really amazing. I go to the closet and I get my clothes out and I put them back in the dirty clothes and they miraculously appear back here again. It's magic. And she told me, she said, well, that can stop. They don't have to appear there magically all the time. I can fix it. So I said, well, thank you. No, let's go ahead and keep it the way it is for now. So this is what wives are supposed to do. And this is where the SG3 lies for them. You're frittering away SG3 if you aren't a great housekeeper. You should be a great housekeeper. Not just average, mediocre. Let's shoot for the middle. Be a great housekeeper. So that, you know, your husband doesn't have to do everything. He's not supposed to anyway. He's got other things. He's got other responsibilities. But now again, I'm not saying men can't help. They can. I found out you can. You may not like it. May not be fun. But again, I'm not whatever people have in their house, however you do your deal, that's how you do it. But I'm telling you, to have a housekeeper when you got a wife at home is stupid. That's downright dumb. The woman should be taking care of this stuff. Say, well, obviously some of it might be, you know, you can't want your wife out cleaning the eaves and checking the roof and stuff like that. Obviously there's limitations in all of this of what a woman can do. But why isn't the woman taking care of her own house? That's a fundamental question to me. And what's the Bible say she's supposed to be doing, by the way? It's not just me. I didn't make this up. This is the will of God for women. And again, in our country, we've blown all this off. And we wonder why marriages aren't happy. Well, wives aren't happy because, number one, they're not fulfilling what wives are supposed to be. Same thing for husbands. Why are they not happy? They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Happiness doesn't come automatically. Again, it comes from within. And there's a certain satisfaction that comes out of doing things right instead of just being mediocre. Strive for mediocrity. Shoot for the middle. No, pass. I would rather shoot for the stars. Now, I may fall short. And I will. And I do. But I'm at least shooting high. Why not shoot for the top of this stuff? You are spiritually dead. What do you got to lose in all of this? No, it's denying yourself. It's having priorities straight. And that sort of thing. Also, 1 Timothy 5:14. And I think this one's in the context specifically of older women. And again, while this is the woman's deal, one of the things that a woman should do too, by the way, if she's supposed to be teaching these younger women, if she's got children, she should teach her children this. A woman that doesn't raise her daughter to be a good Christian homemaker has failed as a woman. This is a failure if you don't teach your children this stuff. They ought to know how to cook and clean and take care of things. Unless they're going to happen to marry somebody who's got so much money that they don't ever have to do any of that. But how many women get that? Not very many. And really, still, even if you do, does it let you off the hook doctrinally? And the answer is no, it doesn't. So you teach your children. Hey, if you have a good relationship, this is one of the things. My wife is stellar in a whole lot of this stuff. I mean, she has her issues. I know it. But she's stellar at a lot of this. She has a relationship with her daughter most of you would kill to have if you had children. Because they'll talk about, you know, things, and they don't share confidences necessarily. But they'll discuss about Christian wives and what they're supposed to be doing and how, sometimes the younger woman will complain, oh, my husband's this and that. Linda will tell her, well, that's just men. That's just men. What are you going to do? You're not going to change them. So you have to figure out what your part in this is and do it and focus on that. And no matter what your husband does or another spectrum, whatever your wife does, don't bail her out if she's not doing what she's supposed to be doing. Let her suffer for it a little bit. You say, well, I don't want to see her suffer. I love her. Well, of course you do. And I don't want to see wives suffer either. But if they're not fulfilling their mandates, they're going to at a certain level. They should. And don't do everything for them. If they won't get up and take care of their stuff, tell them and then let it go. Pray about it, of course. Continue to pray. Pray for them, obviously. One of the things you can do, and it's easy to overlook this, praying for your wife. That she needs just as much help and support as you need. That she'll get where she needs to be spiritually and all that. So therefore, in this matter of younger widows, I want them to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach. For some have already turned aside to follow Satan. And these are believing women he's talking about, who at one time were oriented, but their husband died for whatever reason. Or they're widows. And rather than fulfilling their mandates, what do? They run around, they're busybodies, they gossip, they put their nose in places where it shouldn't be. This is an occupational hazard for women, particularly women who have time on their hands. You're going to fill your time with something. And if you're not filling it with all this housekeeping and stuff that takes, you know what I've also found out? It takes more time than you might think to do this. Because every week now I have to run the vacuum, and that takes longer than you think. And it's not even a very big house. I think we got like 1,400 so square feet. And it takes a while to do that. You don't just do it in 2 minutes. And that's the easy part. What I really hate is mopping. You know. And there's certain household things, you know. I always thought it was fun for wives. Oh, you must like this. It's fun for you, I guess. No, it's not. But I do it. And so the grateful husband says, yeah, okay, I want a woman like this. It used to be that song, I want a girl. Just like the girl that married dear old dad. You know, if you had a good mom and she was a good wife, well, yeah, that's kind of what the song's about. So in the normal apostolic household, again, women, they really weren't free to do all this. They didn't get out and meddle in public, generally speaking. But by the time, if you keep your household clean, you do the shopping, you do the cooking and cleaning, and all of that. That's a big part of your day right there. Just doing that stuff. And then you have the regular things that any believer has to do, prayer and personal study if you're going to do it. We have tremendous resources online where you can, we got doctrines for years and all that, Bible classes. Books you can go back and hear profitably. I think I can stand behind most of it. But if I had to go back and review some things, there are things I'd probably change in the teaching. So if you hear me say something weird, don't freak out. Realize I was just a growing believer too. Working through it. Well, however, that would mean here, point A, that there was little to no opportunity for the wife to earn any significant income. Nevertheless, her contributions are exceedingly valuable. The family could not really exist without them. And should be acknowledged and honored. Modern research suggests that if a stay-at-home mom, that's the Sam there, were paid for their various responsibilities, involved in successfully managing a household, her salary would be upwards of $150,000 a year. So do you think your wife's worth six figures? I think she's worth 6 cents. Well, that's the way a lot of men act, though. And if you had to pay for all this stuff, the cleaning, going to get the laundry, doing the laundry, doing floors, windows, cooking, going to the store, running errands, picking up things. Well, you'd have to hire somebody different for all this stuff. Like one person probably wouldn't come in and do your laundry and do your outside of your house. Then you got, the outside and all that. Generally, we tend to think that that's the man's because it's more difficult. He's the stronger vessel. So he takes care of the mowing and the head edging and all that kind of stuff. And that's a part of keeping a house. Well, see, while there are a number of variables in households that may raise or lower that figure, the point is that the Christian Sam is far more valuable than many might believe. And in that regard, Peter urges husbands to live with their wives according to sound doctrinal principles and be prepared to bestow honor on her for her contributions. This strikes at the selfishness of the man's sin nature, though. And we all have it that we have to overcome and learn to fight this and accept the fact that, no, this is not appropriate behavior just because this is the way the cosmos does it. And we've seen this verse. We just looked at it. Live with her in an understanding way. And grant her honor. Show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. So the Greek noun timē, honor, price, or value. First denoted the amount at which something was valued. We might call it the estimation of the price or value of it. And it has that. Esteem is a part of that. That's where esteem comes into this as well. You esteem something to be worth X amount, whatever it is. And see, things that people think are valuable, I don't care about in the cosmic scheme of things. First thing I usually do in the mornings, watch the news and the weather and see what's going on in the world, what new things have happened. And this guy's on there. If you ever watch Fox 13, he's an idiot, but they have a segment with him every day, and I get so sick of watching. But anyway, it's so-and-so, what can you do? And he's on there, and he's got this guy's Super Bowl ring, and he's just, this is great. This is amazing. This is the finest thing I've ever seen. This is wonderful. I thought, who cares? If I got a Super Bowl ring, I probably wouldn't wear it. But who cares? What's so important about all that stuff? You know? I've never been a big jewelry guy anyway. Normal men aren't. I don't see normal men piercing their ears and wearing girls' clothes and jewelry and, you know. Maybe you want to be like Flavor Flav. I don't know. I don't. Not interested. Well, it designated the value of it. It came to be used to indicate the recognition of the worth of another person. The esteem, dignity, or honor with which he should be treated. He, or in this case, she. So how valuable is she? Well, she's a fellow heir for one thing. You're either going to inherit together or you're not. And ultimately, if she loses, you lose. You just don't know it yet. That's the big dirty secret that most Christian men haven't figured out. If my wife loses, I lose. We both go down in flames if one of us goes down. There's no winner in that regard. And there may not be a winner at the bema seat in that regard. So I'd carefully consider all that. Because God may grade this a little harder than the cosmos does. And my suspicion is he does. That he does grade things a little bit more in terms of full righteousness than the world does. So she's a fellow heir of the grace of life. Why? Now there's a functional, active reason to do this. Because God's going to jam your prayer life otherwise. So have you ever prayed about something and wanted it and it just didn't work out? Well, maybe God was frustrating you because of the way you treat your wife. And if that's the case, you want to fix that probably pretty quick. I would say get on top of that really expeditiously. Because God has ways of showing men that he's stronger than they are. Oh yeah, you may be the dominant authority in the home. And we know that men are. But who's the dominant authority overall? And again, this constantly back and through this, you see this emphasis on Christology through this whole passage. For the wives and for the husbands both. That he is our standard. Our Christian life is to affect how we live this out in the home. So sometimes the matter of mental attitude and overt honor involve a financial component. One very real way to honor someone is with a tangible financial gift. And it doesn't have to be money. Some people find money crass. I don't. If you feel led to give me money, go for it. I'm all for that. I didn't used to be. But I've grown up in that area and realized, hey, if somebody wants to apply, who am I to tell them not to apply? By the way, I don't need money, so don't feel like this is begging for money from the pulpit. I can do that later. No, we're not. We don't do that. 1 Timothy 5, 17 and 18, in a completely different context here. And people are all too quick to recognize, and I think it's a good thing, don't get me wrong. I'm in favor that you recognize the value of a good pastor, because we don't grow on trees. We're not out there everywhere. There aren't very many of us, frankly, that really, I think, want to do this right and are willing to be intellectually honest, evaluate everything. That was one of the first things I figured out. Right after, it was even before I was out of Maranatha, before I'd even come down here. I realized I've got to question everything. I know how it was taught. Here's the good deposit, it's perfect, you got it, just run with it. Okay. And you better not deviate it from one iota or you'll be doomed. Okay. That's all fine and good if you're perfect. But as it turned out, my good deposit wasn't perfect. Huh? There was some counterfeit stuff in there. You know, my good deposit had some real money and some Confederate money. You might say. Which isn't very valuable. Although maybe you might be able to sell it to collectors now for real money. But I don't know. And I don't care. But the point is, there are certain things you have to be willing to evaluate and say, wait a second, is this correct? Does this hold water? Like the Ephesians 5:18 thing. That verse always troubled me. But I didn't have time to exegete it or figure it all out in context. But now I see it clearly wasn't what it was taught. There were many such passages. 1 Corinthians 3. I was taught gold, silver, precious stones. Oh, that's SG3. No, it's not. 1 Corinthians 2 even. Things that eye has not seen and ear has not heard. That's SG3. No, it's not. Hey, if we don't know what it is, we'll just call it SG3. Well, that seemed to be what was done in some cases. And no, it's not. The things God has prepared for us is these categories of wisdom. That's what he's talking about in context. And then there's the obvious stuff. No, angels didn't fall. All of them didn't fall. Only a third of them did. And so you have to straighten out certain things. The book of, or for instance, the doctrine of separation and authority. Those things were so overblown and so overemphasized. And I tell you what, one of the things you had to never get tired of hearing was the doctrine and the importance of doctrine, because you were going to get it two or three times a year probably. As if that's the only doctrine that we should review. Ever. No, it's in it. Don't get me wrong. The doctrine, the importance of doctrine is important, because it points out that apart from sound doctrine, none of the Christian life really works. That this is all hinges on that. As Paul said there back in Ephesians there, chapter 4. I've forgotten now, I just lost my train of thought. But at any rate, so here the elders who rule well are to be considered worthy of double honor. And this doesn't mean that you think twice as highly of them. You express it with an honorarium, financially. And a good pastor, like a good wife, is probably worth his weight in gold. Because he's going to be looking out for your best interests. And he'll be willing to tell you the truth. And he'll be willing to deal with the hard issues. That's what you have to have. If a pastor's worth double honor, well, what about your wife? That's why I say this is a completely different context, and I get it, but the principle works along the lines in a number of situations, not just for pastors, especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. The scripture says, you shall not muzzle the ox while he is threshing. Well, that's tantamount to keeping things away from your wife while she takes care of the house. You withhold from her while she gives. That's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. The laborer is worthy of his wages. So 63, the household responsibilities do not solely belong to the wife. Now that's her primary area though. She's supposed to handle this. Husbands aren't to really step in and take over and handle it for her. Now there's exceptions to this, obviously. If your wife is disabled and can't do things, that's one thing. And so you're patient with that. You help there. But if you've got a healthy, well-bodied wife, well, able-bodied, and I'm not talking about how she's built. I'm talking about she's capable of working. She should be. And how many women get into trouble in their Christian life because they just have too much time on their hands? They just have too much time to sit around and think and stew and fret and worry and all of that. And how does that help anybody? And while the fundies overblow this, the reality is a busy Christian is far better off than an unbusy Christian. If you're constantly mentally cycling the doctrine, trying to apply towards that situation, whatever it is. And very often this requires work, follow through. And that's how we're going to be judged on our works. So while it doesn't solely belong to her, the husband has also responsibilities to maintain the household. He should probably be in charge of physical repairs and maintenance and all of that at a minimum. And contribute to raising the children, if there are any in the home. Proverbs 22:6. This is a part of the responsibility of both parents to train up a child in the way they should go. And all of us who have had children have, no doubt, some that bring us joy and some that, you know, not so much. Some that you're happy about, some that you're not spiritually. And so really, as a child, what should you strive for? Child should strive to, hey, when my parents think of me, I hope it makes them happy. Rather than bumming them out. I think of that child and you just go, ugh. And we, you know, I've got one child like that and I've got another one that's excellent. So, you know, And the one who's not excellent, well, guess what? It's all my fault. Just ask him. He'll tell you. It's all my failures. And yet the two weren't, there was no preferential treatment given to these kids. I did raise them both the same way, same love, same environment, and same sacrifice to take care of them, all of that. And one of them turns out, one doesn't. Well, that as a parent, you can't do anything about. Ultimately, the volition, generally speaking, though, if they come from a good environment, they at least have a chance. But see, kids aren't happy. And why aren't they happy? Number one, they're not pursuing God's plan. How are they ever going to be happy? You're not even orienting to the niche God has provided for you as a child. And you think you're going to be happy. You're never going to be happy until you get hooked up with God's plan and start doing His will. As Jesus said, I have food to eat that you don't know about. And what sustained Him was doing the will of God in a spiritual sense. So again, you would think that if there's children in the house, they have to do that. Ephesians 6:4, we're going to look just ahead a little bit. We've got it coming up here, though. Won't be too far off. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. And where is the emphasis in the household on who raises the children? The father is the one that's responsible at the end of the day. And so too often, how many Christian homes have blown this off and the man's busy working and he's not there and he doesn't support the wife and he doesn't interact with the kids much and wonders why they're maladjusted and disoriented? I can tell you why they're maladjusted and disoriented. It's not hard. But you're responsible to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And if he had meant mothers primarily, he could have said parents here, because he uses parents in verse 1. So he could have said both parents, but he focuses specifically on the father. And this is one of the things we see in all of this that we're studying, this whole household codes here. And that is that the man is singled out far more often than anybody else. He's got responsibilities at many levels. This is one of the things you can pray for your husband about. He's got responsibilities that you don't have. And if there's no children, that makes it a little bit easier, though. And also 1 Timothy 3:4. And this is obviously is a part of the pastoral code, which would apply to deacons as well. But this is something you want in every man in your congregation. If you don't do it, yes, it can disqualify you from service. You can lose SG3 because you can't do this or won't do this. I don't think any of us are going to be able to claim at the end, oh God, I just couldn't do it. No, it's that you wouldn't do it is the bigger issue. We can do this stuff. So he must be one who manages his own household well. And that involves the whole thing, not just finances. People want to focus on that as household management. That's part of it. But part of it's the marriage. Part of it's the children. If you have servants that you have to deal with, part of it's that. And then taking care of a whole house. It's a challenge. But obviously we can do it under grace because God provides what we need to do our stuff. It's not as though he gives us these commands and says, well, I won't be there to help you. You got to work this out on your own. No, there's grace to do all of this. Operational grace, like Paul was talking about back there in chapter 3 that he received. To fulfill that apostolic office that he had been given. They had the grace to fill it out and to do it. So 64, one practical way a husband can demonstrate love in the household is to leave his work at work. Turn off his electronic... What? No... I'm lost without my cell phone. I'd be lost for an hour. See how it feels. You know, everybody doesn't have to be connected every minute. This is one of the lies Satan's foisted on society. If you're out on the loop, you're going to miss it. Miss what? What is it we're missing out on by not being a part of the cosmos out there? I have to be real honest with you. I'm glad the Bucks made the Super Bowl. I hope like hell they win. But would I go there? No, not interested. I'd be happy to sit at home and watch it in a safe environment, not surrounded by a bunch of drunk idiots, and that I don't have to then get out and drive home with. God help you. Some of this stuff, guess what? Turn off your TV. It won't kill you. Turn off your TV and talk to your wife for 10 minutes.
Bummer. I don't want to.
And so men that do this can testify to you that this is helpful. That this actually will enhance your marriage. This won't hurt it. So put down his beer. Pitch in. Now we're more refined today. I should have put down his wine. But we're, you know, or his high dollar bourbon. Whatever it is. It's just the alcoholic drink. His pina colada, you can put in there, I guess. And pitch in and support his wife by helping her with the work. Again, helping her with the work is not the same as doing it for her. There's a huge difference. And you've got to figure out this difference as a husband, if you're going to do this right. You want to be there to support her and encourage her and all that, but you're not here to take her responsibilities off of her. Those are still her responsibilities. Both the people in the household have their own set of responsibilities to fulfill. And if you're busy doing that, you don't have time to worry about what the other one's doing. If you're busy focusing on what you're supposed to be doing. But no, I got to focus on them because I got to fix them. You're not going to fix them. Forget the fixing. At best, you're probably just putting a patch on that tire and it's going to blow out later anyway. Patches don't work. This has to come from within. It's got to come from the person. They have to supply this. So I have found experientially that men can do the dishes, make the bed, run the vacuum, clean the floor, shop for groceries, and cook a meal. But that's not their job. That's the wife's job. All of that stuff. It's the wife's job. It's her responsibility first. Now, to help her and encourage her, sure, you can pitch in. But don't let her start taking that for granted either. Oh, I know he'll do it if I don't. You have set yourself up for failure if you do that. Because that's not what you're not here to remove her right to. Well, also, you're destroying her SG3 at some level when you overdo. You say, well, yeah, well, I'm getting all the rewards. Are you? I don't know how God will work all that out. But you know what? I'm not so quick to pronounce how God's going to judge. I don't know all the facts. I don't know what all he'll take into account. But we know the judgment will be perfect. I don't know what God will do. But I do know what my responsibilities are. And I can focus on that and get those done. Those are only some of the practical ways in which a man may demonstrate love for his wife. And that's easy. And of course, you got Valentine's Day coming up. You don't have to take her to Eddie's. Eddie's didn't exist anymore. Forgot where I was. I'm old. Where am I? Fleming's, I meant to say. God, I wish Eddie's was still open. I would kill for some cabbage rolls and hummus right now. Let's start thinking about lunch. Getting distracted. you can take her out to eat. But don't take her out on Valentine's Day. For God's sake, these places are packed. They're overbooked. And we've gone out before on Valentine's Day. It wasn't fun, let's just say. So we usually do it a different day. But you can take her out on the 13th or the 15th. It's okay. I know people think Valentine's Day is holy. It's not. Or do something for her birthday or that kind of thing. Surprise her. Be creative. You can come up with something. But again, these are things. She might like to go out and eat. Well, I just wouldn't go that night. But you can go that night if you want to. Fight the crowds and all that. I don't care. But you can do it another time, too. If she does most of the cooking, which she probably should, well, you can help with cooking a meal, but you're not there to cook every meal. That's not your job. Your job is to help, maybe, to help your helpmate. But her job is to do all of that. So again, it must be stressed, point 66, I'll close with this one, that agape love does not focus on how a husband feels about his wife or his responsibilities. I don't care how you feel about this, frankly. These are the facts as they exist before the Lord. How you feel about it or I feel about it is really irrelevant. These are the truths of doctrine that we have to deal with. And so, whether he does or doesn't, the command to love indicates that the husband is to make the choice to put the best interest of his wife above his own. And again, I try to point out, sometimes putting her best interest will involve helping her. Sometimes it involves not helping her, making her do it, letting her fulfill her responsibilities before the Lord. Because this is, again, a partnership. And you can't have a home. A house divided will never stand. If it's not united, it's going to fall. That's just the way things work. And same for local churches, same for marriages, same for families, and in fact, same for countries, frankly. Countries that are united have a much better chance than a divided country of making it and surviving. Because a divided country, well, you've got these people always playing both factions against each other. And we see how that's been working out in the last few decades for us, haven't we? As the American public is largely divided on a bunch of matters. One of them is fiscal responsibility. Yeah, it's easy to take this $5,000 they're going to send you, but where are they getting it? So, as Jack Handy said once, I want to make the world safe for our children, but not for their children. He said, children shouldn't be having children. And that's true. It was a joke, though. But we want to provide for the next generation, and part of that is setting an example in this generation. How are kids going to ever learn to grow up and be husbands and wives, Christian husbands and wives, if they don't see an example in the home? They're not. Generally speaking, they won't. And even if you provide the best, most sterling example you can, there's no guarantees there. We know that. Because volition is the final matter. All right, well, let's get this next verse done. I think we can get the exegesis done here for verse 26. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her, the church. Purpose clause now, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with a word. And I really should have a comma there after water. I didn't put that in there, but I will. We need to fix that. Purpose clause, of course, is introduced by Hina. The conjunction, H-I-N-A, used with the subjunctive. In order that, or so that, her, and here you have the accusative, the direct object of the verb set up first to emphasize it, autos. It's the feminine form, third feminine singular. Her, the church. In order that her he might sanctify. Just moving the object to forward draws more attention to it, puts emphasis on it. Sanctify is hagiazo. H-A-G-I-A-Z-O. Hagiazo means to set apart for one's personal use, to consecrate for a purpose. It's generally translated by the English term sanctify. So that he might sanctify her. And then you have what I believe here is a parenthetical clause. That is it's led off by an aorist subjunctive. But the sanctify her, that clause interrupts the flow of the sentence, and sanctify her is completed with a word. Not the word, by the way. The New American Standard, I believe, has taken the liberty here of putting in a definite article. And it's easy to overlook that. But it's not there in the Greek. And in this case, it's significant, I think. So in order that he might set her apart, having cleansed is katharizo, K-A-T-H-A-R-I-Z-O. Katharizo means just exactly that, to wash something, to make it clean. We know what it means physically. Here it's a moral cleansing. She's not just cleansed physically. Many interpreters here want to make this water baptism right here. That this is where she's cleansed. But that's not what's in view at all. First, it's a spiritual cleansing. Not a physical one. So, literally, after having cleansed, if you see this participle here as a temporal force, after cleansing her, and sometimes when an aorist verb is followed by an aorist participle, it can have time-wise the same sense. By cleansing, and so some use this as means. He might sanctify her. Well, both are true, but the cleansing, as we're going to see, is phase one salvation. That's where the cleansing took place. The cleansing, having cleansed her with a bath. To lutron. L-O-U-T-R-O-N. That's the neuter form here. Dative neuter singular. Or here, instrumental better. Two times this word's used in the whole New Testament. And it means just exactly that, a washing or a bath. A whole washing, an entire washing, as opposed to, say, cleaning your hands. Or in that day, your feet, because of the road conditions and the type of footwear they used. So, again, a washing, this is metaphorical washing, a spiritual cleansing, a bath here. The washing of water the washing of the water, literally, hudor, although hudor has the definite article. Again, if you see this as subjective genitive, water is what washes something. It's what cleans it. It's a cleansing. Or if you see it, you could categorize it as a genitive of description. It's a water bath. You could translate it like that. That's okay too. Either one I think could be okay here. Having cleansed her with a water bath. And then you have a preposition here in, and this actually completes the thought of sanctify her. He's parenthetically told you that he cleanses her first. But sanctification involves more than phase one salvation, as you should probably know. That's where it starts. So you got the preposition in with or by here. Again, it looks to be an instrumental of means, with, by means of, rather, we might say, harema. H-R-E-M-A. Now, this is not the normal Greek word for word. The normal Greek term for word is logos. We have a different one here. The ma suffix, as it turns out, tends to communicate kind of a passive sort of participle form of a word. Rhema focuses on what has been said. A speaking, a pronouncement, something like that, a statement. Whereas word, this can be used of individual words, this can be used of words, discourses, like speeches. It can be used in a big way or a very little way, depending on what's in view there. But rhema focuses on what has been said. So he might cleanse her, he might sanctify her. By, and you have a couple of choices here. Some say this word term or this phrase modifies the washing of water, and it defines how the washing of water occurs with the word, with a word. Or it is connected, and I think more likely it's connected to the verb hagiadzo back there, that he might sanctify her with a word after having cleansed her by the washing of water, if you want to just slightly reverse the word order to make it clear. Okay, well, we got through that. We'll be ready to dive into this. So that's it for the exegesis. We'll stop there and pick up here on Tuesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship in the things of your plan with like-minded people. We pray that you would sanctify this information to our growth, individually and corporately, and to our marriages. In Christ's name, amen.